Welcome to the GGB podcast. We're doing another in our series of GGB Live at ICE here in Barcelona. And I've got a multiple podcast right now with the guys from KPMG. Immediately to my right is Rick Arpin, who's based in Las Vegas, and Bob Stoddard. Where are you based, Bob?
Stamford, Connecticut.
Okay. And finally, Russell Mifsud, who's based in Malta. So we've got a whole around the world thing here. So when you talk about the black market, you know, in the UK, for example, they limited the stakes to $5 maximum, whereas there's no maximum in the online things. Is that one of the reasons the black market is growing so quickly?
I mean, a number of measures. So for sure, if you look at the concept of affordability and asking them for more information on players, some people may not feel comfortable sharing that information or understand why they need to be providing that information. That's potentially one of the things that the industry needs to become better at, telling that narrative. That's why we've been, from an ESG angle, we've been looking at it, because that can better educate then some of the stakeholders. Advertising restrictions, right? We know industry, when there is an opportunity to advertise, tends to go all out at their peril, because then that often means that politicians, once again, or regulators will clamp down and reel that in. We look at Italy, for instance. Mm-hmm. But what does that mean then? It means that there's no distinction between the black and the white, right? So that's a struggle then in itself. So a range of complications are fueling it. And the reality is the industry is becoming a lot more expensive. Mm-hmm. You find far fewer startups, at least from a B2C standpoint nowadays, compared to 10 years ago.
Sure.
You need to have deep pockets then to be able to even make a dent. And that is at, if you compare that then to the black market, you can get an operation running very, very quickly, channel it through Telegram or through crypto. I think majority of people at conferences, you find the ones that are smiling the brightest then are often the ones that are dabbling around in some of the darker markets.
Right. So one of the, not only is there a black market, but there's a gray market. And some of these gray market casinos are licensed in the Jersey, the Isle of Man, or Malta. So why should people really not trust those, or why should they trust those casinos that are licensed in those places that don't have the same kind of KYC, AML regulations as a robust jurisdiction?
Sure. I mean, I tend to make the distinction between white being regulated, light gray, which is in between regulations, so a jurisdiction that hasn't come up with a fully fledged regulatory regime, darker gray, whereby there will be penalties, which we've seen, either for operators then or for players, and black, which is outright ruled out. I think where we look at cases where somebody may be going into a light gray market, or dabbling around with certain verticals that aren't clear-cut, that's one of the key things we've seen over the past 10 years. These groups have leveled up on their compliance teams and regulatory teams to take, if you like, certain calculated risks. But don't get me wrong, if there's an operator that is operating in a market that offers a licensing regime and they're doing it through a .com license, that's a no-go.
So I imagine you've been staying up on the UAE as well. I mean, that was a jurisdiction that went legal that kind of surprised me, and I think a lot of people.
Yeah.
Tell us how that's going, and do you think they're doing it the right way?
So I have limited view. I know that a lot of the region is looking at regulation. You know, certain strong ones or obvious ones have everything pretty much locked and loaded. As we typically see in the Emirates, we know that they like to go very big. We know that there's an appetite to be creating more of an ecosystem. Gambling would feature in that, but we know that looking at likes of video gaming and comic books, to build that tech, of course, to build up that one-stop shop. You know, they're diversifying away then from the reliance from an oil standpoint, and they've got very big war chest, if you like, to be investing in businesses then to help fuel that that ambition. It's one to see. I agree with you, Roger. I wasn't expecting the appetite that there was, but seeing some of the players that are starting to get in, or the people that are starting to associate themselves or base themselves out there, I think it's going to start to become a very interesting market for the industry.
No question. Well, Bob, you're an expert in the tax regime. They haven't really announced what their taxes are going to be in the UAE. that's kind of funny that a company would jump in there without knowing what the taxes are. Is it assumed that they're going to be reasonable?
I don't know that I would make it necessarily, and the assumption that it's reasonable is probably different shades of opinions on that range, right? We've seen that discussion commonly in the U.S. and other jurisdictions as the regulators have, or state legislatures in our case, have changed rates midstream. I think we're probably as an industry assuming it will be some type of comparable tax base on GGR. I think everybody's hoping it'll be a fairly reasonable, in their minds, reasonable base rate from an operator perspective. I think you get different opinions on what that rate is if you ask different parties.
It's probably going to be some sort of graduated rate, you would assume?
Tiered rate.
Yeah, and we've seen a move towards tiered rate, at least in a couple jurisdictions in the U.S. as well. It's very possible we could see that there. We could see a flat rate as well.
Yeah, I had a young lady in here yesterday, an attorney from Abu Dhabi, and she was saying that the corporate tax rate is 9%, which is pretty reasonable, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So you think that you know, the graduated tax rate is not going to get crazy. Well, maybe you could.
It's a government, right?
But
the industry's relying on the experience that the hospitality industry, the tourism industry as a whole has had, in particularly in the Emirates, where I think there's a perception of stability in the government and a Western style leaning into business, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, they have some cultural and societal views that are different than ours, but from a business perspective, I think folks, there's maybe a long enough history of working with Western companies in the hospitality and tourism industry that tells them, this will be a reasonable, as you use the word, reasonable jurisdiction.
Okay. So going back to Europe, we just saw Wynn Resorts buy a casino in London, a high-end casino, Crown Aspinall, a very, very well-known casino there. What do you think they're going to use that for?
I have no idea, to be honest. I'd be speculating.
I know one thread has been that it's a customer acquisition play, in particular for their UAE effort. I do know that I've heard concerns from some in the industry around where are the customers going to come from in the Emirates. Obviously, there's a heavy tourism base, so that part is taken care of, but. A large portion of the higher end customers in Dubai are often folks that companies like Wynn won't be able to deal with. So for them to make this move is maybe looking how to solve that problem, if the problem's the right word for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So swing to the U.S. There's still a few jurisdictions that don't have gaming, still pretty big hanging fruits out there. Let's start with Texas. What do you think is going to happen there, especially with Miriam Adelson pushing it?
I mean, I don't think it's going to happen this time, but I don't think that's a shocking view for most of us covering the industry. I think we're all generally aligned there. So, but I think we all also think it's not it's when, right? I think... one of the struggles, I suppose, is that one of the common wisdoms for the last few years has been once we get past the COVID relief money, state budgets start to get crimped, we'll see more iGaming and maybe land-based expansion, right? And what's the first thing we see? Maryland wants to raise their tax rate on existing sports betting, right? And so I think, again, the industry, Russell mentioned coming together in Europe. I mean, I think the industry has to be pretty forward and together in sort of trying to steer the lobbying conversations here towards the way we'd want to see, which is, we'd love to see land-based gaming in Texas. We'd love to see more iGaming, obviously, that sort of thing.
Sure.
So, I think it's going to be another challenging year from an expansion perspective.
Well, Bob, we've already seen some jurisdictions raise their tax rates, and a lot more proposed out there. Do you think it was a mistake for the industry not to push back more on New York with the 51% tax rate there?
I think you probably ask 10 people and get 5 or 6 different answers on this one. I think the New York market was always going to be an incredibly valuable market in terms of getting the market share and gathering that customer base, particularly now that I think just today a proposed legislation to add iCasino in New York, and I think the long game, that was always the long game, is being willing to agree to that higher rate in anticipation of getting iCasino, which, as we've seen in Pennsylvania, which has an even higher rate on slot play or iSlot play, it is a can be a profitable market with iCasino in the mix, and so I think that was always part of the equation. Look, at the same time, I do think hindsight being 2020, I'm sure people would have, you know, would wish they had gone after a lower rate in terms of at the outset negotiating with the state on what they would be amenable to. And we've seen this play out in terms of ways to mitigate that rate, which we saw with the surcharge conversation. We've seen it now with the subscription conversation as well.
Right, and I think when you look at the way it was proposed, the 51% for the sports betting, I think that a lot of the companies were looking down the road at iGaming, where 51% isn't terrible for iCasino, you know.
Right.
So
right.
You know, who knows? It will work out. We'll see.
Yeah. We'll see what happens in this session.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of things going on in online gaming in the U.S. The sweepstakes casinos. Let's start with them. I'm from New Jersey, and I'm surprised but the legislator there actually introduced a bill allowing sweepstakes casinos, but they want to be regulated.
So regulated as iGaming.
Why would you want to be regulated? You can just do iGaming. You know, it doesn't make any sense to me. Yeah. But where do you think that's going to go? Not that bill in particular, but sweepstakes casinos in the U.S.
In general, it's a space we've followed pretty closely, mm-hmm. and we are working in the entire ecosystem. Have worked across regulated gaming, fantasy sports, skills, sweepstakes operators.
Right.
And, you know, my personal view is you can see history somewhat repeating itself, mm-hmm. and as it did with the daily fantasy sports rollout, including many of the comparable cease and desist actions, class action lawsuits, and things like that. So my own view is longer term. It feels like this may be a part regulated, part unregulated conversation, which I think both is challenging mm-hmm. to navigate, but it does create both the challenges and the opportunities as well. I think it will be very telling, though, where some of the larger states that currently don't have either sports betting or iCasino will land on the concept of mm-hmm. sweepstakes.
Right.
In particular ones, and you have a split, right? You have some that look like a bit like sports books and some that look more like a traditional iSlot.
Rick, I did a podcast with Chris Grove last month, and we were talking about this. Of course, Chris has the investment firm he's partnered with Jim Murren in, and they're investing in sweepstakes casinos. And I'm saying, Jim Murren wants the sweepstakes casinos, but apparently so. So is that a message to the industry that we don't want to get left behind like we did at DFS?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that why I talk to operators and suppliers about is that, and I'm of the same view directionally that Bob is, that this ends up in a regulated scenario or again a bifurcation of where it's clear, more clear than it is today, what a sweepstakes means that's regulated versus unregulated, and from a gaming perspective. And I think, to me, the faster we get to that point of what feels more inevitable, the better, because then the operators and suppliers can have a much better say, if you will, in how the industry evolves, and it can participate much more in the opportunity or upside or however you'd like to frame that, compared to in the daily fantasy perspective, history, it was, well, let's fight this thing. And all they did was build up a huge database, and then we let them in anyway, so to speak. Right? The we there is the industry, and the them is the daily fantasy. So I think it probably behooves us to just, let's sort of figure out what the guardrails are here.
Right.
Let's set those guardrails. Let's then have the condition be that if you want to play within these guardrails, then you're going to be regulated, I assume, taxed similarly, regulated similarly as an iGaming or a sports betting operator, and then move on. Because I think and I say that as someone who is very much on the side of the industry, if you will, from the gaming, you know, if, you shouldn't try to get around gambling regulations. So I look at, you know, the whatever that number is today, the 100,000 machines in Pennsylvania, whatever that number is, and I think, my gosh, they're sitting there. Why can't you just turn them off and take them away?
Yeah.
The problem in the sweepstakes or other similar items is it's not even that simple. So we haven't been able to figure out with things that are physical.
Right.
How are we going to figure it out with things that are digital?
Yeah.
So again, the faster I think we sort of just acknowledge that, get them in a regulated sort of scheme, I think is better for all of us, personally.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then we have the predictions market, which exploded during the last election, and to make it even more complicated, that turns out to be a financial instrument that the feds have oversight on. I mean, what's going to happen there?
I mean, one big issue, I don't know if it's a risk, opportunity, whatever, this industry has been pretty steadfast as a group for years and years and years that we want state regulation, we don't want federal regulation, right? And you know, we've now seen a couple federal hearings. We've got a clearly unclear distinction between betting and futures contracts and everything that, I mean, I think we all probably thought was clear six or 9 months ago.
Right.
All of a sudden is not clear and is going to require someone to sort of help define that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be the federal government and or the court systems.
Yeah.
And so there's one lens of this that kind of worries me about, you know, what that's a lot of uncertainty for this industry, right?
Yeah.
And then from a practical business perspective, it's obviously if it says that, that's all fine and dandy, then you've got a bunch of new potential competitors for the industry, right?
Sure.
That I don't think, again, folks a year ago were putting in their sort of calculus or their strategic plans.
Right. Yeah.
So.
And then there's been a lot of companies that are not yet into the sports betting or iGaming market, say Robinhood, for example.
Exactly.
And who knows what they're going to do when they come into the market. Can you see any other crossovers from any other industry? I mean, entertainment or, I mean, it just seems to be kind of like the Wild West there, you know, early on.
I think that's right. And I think the other area that it maybe accelerates the considerations and again near-term uncertainty of is probably cryptocurrency, because those types of entities are that's in their wheelhouse,
right? Yeah.
And so, you know, just these are things that I think we may have to deal with sooner than maybe we, and again, the we here is just the industry generally, that we wanted to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think maybe just to add to that, we've been discussing the convergence of the spheres, so gambling and video gaming, wider entertainment. And I think one of the exciting things that regulation does bring is that it brings in other parties that may not be connected to the gambling sphere, take telecoms for instance, and look at their assets and say, we've actually got a competitive advantage, for instance, where we can get the marketing costs for a fraction of the price than the existing powers would be able to get it for. So that starts to spur on new parties, right, to get into the space. I guess even looking at Disney and ESPN and ESPN, where we've seen it, and there was the transaction with Sega Sammy then as well recently, and that's exciting in my mind because it starts to spur on innovation, and it starts to shock then a lot of the market leaders to say, right, we can't just be market leaders in our space, we've got new contenders. It would be interesting to see what Robin Hood brings.
Yeah, no question.
And I think that's a great point, because the other piece I would add on top of that is, let's not forget the player perspective.
Absolutely.
And breaking down the friction,
right,
cross-channel friction.
Right.
If you put gaming to the side for a second and think about it from a Robinhood or, you know, crypto.com or crypto exchange trading, forex trading type platform, many of those fintech businesses already had pretty significant cross-channel participation, right, where you can have your trading activities, investing activities, all in a wallet.
And banking activities as well.
And banking in a wallet, right? This does potentially break down another barrier, and from a customer perspective, there is a lot to be said from having a seamless wallet that is purely cross-channel across all these different types of activities.
Yeah.
And I don't think that should be ignored. That's a very powerful tool.
Yeah, it's very true.
It's even what we had seen with some of the solutions coming out of Europe, where there would be a unified system. So if we're looking at the concept of affordability from the UK, if you've got that national ID card that has all that information already, then that makes it a far less painful than process when it comes down to signing up then with operators, which it ticks the box from both a regulatory standpoint and the customer's.
Yeah, sure, that's a great point.
So something that goes across the industry you've seen for the last couple of years starting to arise is AI. A lot of the companies out on the floor are saying we're building machines that are going to be run by AI. Is that a danger, or is that an opportunity for the industry?
Well, it's definitely both.
Yes.
And that's for every industry,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I think we're probably generally encouraged that people are actually acknowledging the risks of AI, again, more broadly than just gaming. We certainly, as a firm, are spending a lot of time thinking about that and helping our clients think about how to ethically, if you will, set up AI tools. Again, there's a spectrum. I mean, if you're using it to automate certain processes in your back of house, probably less to worry about than if you're using it to segment customers and send offers and that sort of thing. But I think so far we've seen it be pretty responsible sort of tempered, maybe the wrong word. I mean, people are being aggressive trying to build these tools and leverage these tools, but they've got the lens of we need to do it the right way.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
I think you're looking at it. I mean, essentially it's all data, right? That's your first thing you need to be looking at in terms of your data strategy. I agree it's both an opportunity and a potential threat, but you still need to be having humans in between. I remember hearing something, this was with a fast food chain, so outside the gambling sphere, but they had their AI marketing system, and some SMSs went out to tens of thousands of people celebrating a day connected to the Holocaust. You know, just, you know,
yeah.
So you can't take it for granted.
For sure.
It's very exciting, I must say,
to
see where it's
going
to go.
All right, well, I just want to wrap up with this topic. It's something that we always like to talk about, and we haven't seen it that much in the last couple of years, except probably for the IGT Every. But what about M&A in the business? What do you think is going to happen in that area?
Well, I think in the U.S., there's a lot of uncertainty around what the new administration means in specific areas. And questions around, you know, what statements are just statements versus what are going to become policy and that sort of thing.
Sure.
But I would say one clear area where it seems like the policy will be backing up statements is that much less restrictive on M&A.
Right.
And combine that with the general environment that we think has been trending towards a more favorable environment, whether that's interest rates stabilizing,
mm-hmm.
capital markets opening back up, valuations becoming more reasonable. I would expect, we would expect quite a bit of M&A in our industry. And I think we've been seeing, M&A has not stopped in our industry. You know, we probably over-indexed compared to other industries
mm-hmm.
in the last few years because there's so much happening in the online space, et cetera.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of those acquisitions were tuck in sort of build, you know, adding
right.
product, that
sure,
sort of
right.
thing. Mm-hmm. To your point, until the IGT Every acquisition, there wasn't anything, of similar scale. I think we might see that. And I think we may see, people always ask about land-based, you know, what's left, right?
Right.
Maybe this opens up the possibility of a larger merger that we,
mm-hmm.
we assumed wouldn't have happened
right.
under the past administration because of FTC concerns,
sure.
antitrust concerns,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So I think the environment is definitely ripe.
Yeah,
yeah.
great. Yeah. Anything in Europe that you could see coming
down? We'll carry on seeing more consolidation then in the industry. Once again, as the margins shrink, trying to benefit then from economies of
yeah.
scale, seeing a lot of vertical acquisitions taking place whereby they're trying to control then the margins then once again. And that's interesting because that can also be a way of spurring on inflation. I think when we start to look at the ESG side of things, then that's going to be an interesting angle then for a lot of European companies and the due diligences that comes into play. I think a lot of groups are going to be trying to add more value then to their balance sheets, so going through the process of recognizing and valuing IP, then that may dictate then some of the strategic acquisitions they may make, which may not look as obvious just on paper. I think we're going to see it turned up a notch, and we're probably in for some other interesting ones, not just within the industry.
Sure.
Looking at other industries coming in, there's an opportunity
right.
to buy rather than build.
Right. Okay. I lied, one more question. We're here at ICE in Barcelona. This has been, I've been in the business for, 40 years, and this has been the largest trade show I've ever attended. I mean, does that bode well for the industry, do you believe?
I think it's always fascinating to be at an expo, and I've been in the industry for a fraction of the time you've been in. I've been in 15 years, but I walk around and there are so many new names that I find, exactly, which is quite fascinating. Right. And I think that kind of tells a little bit of a story where you've got some groups that may be making money whilst the sun shines.
Right. Yeah.
Others that are trying to build up their presence. We've seen some major brands, right, with huge stands, and I know what some of the pricing was, and they want to be able to showcase that they're a force to be reckoned with. I think ultimately for the customer, if we go back to the player, that's offering them more options in a viable and legal way, let's say, I think that's only sense to benefit the industry and stakeholders.
Okay, great. Well, guys, thanks very much. I feel very honored that I was able to have all three of you on. Next time we'll do it one at a time, and we can do it in Vegas. And
absolutely, sounds good. Absolutely.
Great. Well, thanks for coming by and giving us your wisdom.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for what you do. Very much.
Thank you.
To read more about the topics presented in this week's podcast, visit ggbmagazine.com. To subscribe to GGB's executive summary, go to ggbnews.com and sign up. Don't miss any edition of the GGB podcast. Subscribe on Spotify, Amazon, or Apple Podcasts today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB podcast.